Hello. Hi, I'm Maria Zylstra, here with this week's Lingua Franca. You know how last week we talked about how using language isn't just about knowing the words, but also what they mean in cross-cultural communication? And Sophia Waters shared her confusion about what happened when she was in France and asked, "Have a good weekend?" of her colleagues on a Monday. Well, there is a way to avoid all the confusion, a system of using a core of basic and universal meanings that are the same in all languages. Called the natural semantic meta-language, here is its inventor, Anna Wiesbitzka, Professor of Linguistics at the Australian National University in Canberra, to explain.
Well, the basic idea comes from the philosopher, 17th century philosopher Leibniz. He claimed that there was something he called the alphabet of human thoughts, a number of very simple ideas, concepts, which you can find in all languages. And the idea was that this is part of the innate equipment of human beings. All human beings were born with this. And this was an idea which was actually recalled by my fellow linguist in Poland, Professor Andrzej Boguslawski, and he thought that now, with all the knowledge of the world's languages, we can actually pursue this idea which Leibniz had, sort of theoretically, through languages. And the question was, are there any ideas which we find in all languages? And I found this very fascinating task, and I really started working on that, and that was in the late 1960s, and I've really devoted my life to it. And when I came to Australia, I found wonderful colleagues here and collaborators, and especially my former student and now for many years partner in research, Professor Cliff Goddard from the University of New England in Armidale. And I think we have largely found out, the answer to that question posed 300 years ago by Leibniz. I think we do know what the set of simple, very simple ideas is, which we can find in all languages.
So these words that you're mentioning just now, they are the basic building blocks of concepts out of which you can build more complicated concepts.
Exactly, in any language. So let me just give you some examples. All languages have words like good and bad, someone and something, to think, to know, to want, big and small, concepts of this kind. And on the basis of this concept, and we have found that there are about 60 of them, 63 by the latest count, we can really build a kind of mini language, which can be used for explaining anything to anyone, including children, including immigrants, and also for building intercultural communication.
So you call them, these particular words, 63 you've got up to now, you call them semantic primes or semantic primitives. And in a sense, they're irreducible. I imagine them as kind of analogous to primary colours, red, yellow and blue, out of which you can make a great array of colours. But all rainbows consist basically of these essentials, these primary ones. Is that a good analogy?
We actually prefer a different analogy, the analogy of elements in chemistry, that everything in the world can be made up by combinations of the elements. Well, it used to be 90 and now it's many more, but that's essentially the analogy.
It's a very scientific kind of approach to language, isn't it?
Well, it is, but you can use it. I use it a lot for talking to my six-year-old granddaughter. You can explain anything to a child using these simple words, even the most complicated concepts and ideas.
Well, when you first proposed it, Professor Wiesbitzka, there were only 14 of them, of these semantic primitives. How have you built them up? What's happened over time?
Well, I proposed this set of 14 when I was still working in Poland, and it was mainly on the basis of my knowledge and exploration of European languages and exploration of a number of European languages. But when I came here to Australia in 1972 and I started working at the Australian National University, I found lots of many colleagues who knew a lot about languages of the of Asia, of the Pacific area, and also many students who were native speakers of many very different languages of the world. So that was a wonderful environment in which to pursue the hypothesis, sampling languages from all the continents and lots of different language families. And by empirical study, study, well, we just proceeded as Labing suggested, by trial and error. You just try this concept or that concept, and you test it in lots of different languages. And then you find that many of our candidates wouldn't pass the test, but others would.
So that would take quite a bit of testing, wouldn't it?
Well, that's true. That's absolutely true. But we devised a set of what we called canonical sentences, certain simple sentences. And then we would try to establish with native speakers of other languages and with experts in those other languages whether these sentences can be rendered into those other languages with the same meaning. For example, I don't want bad things to happen to me. Or, well, I don't want bad things to happen to my children, let's say. That seems to be a fairly basic human idea. And you can try, test it, and then you'll find that, yes, you can. You will find words for bad and things and happen and I and don't, negation and want. And you can put them together to convey exactly this idea. And this is one of the sort of canonical sentences. Well, except for children, I mean, you can find a word for children in all languages, but children, it's a concept which can be defined further, so it's not really one of our primes. But essentially, sentences about something bad happened, something good happened, something bad can happen, or this is big, or this is small, or I don't want this. These sentences you can easily test across lots of languages, and so far, all these sentences have withstood the test.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have to ask you now, because you've just mentioned as an aside that the word children isn't one of your primes, and yet surely that's a concept that's universal amongst all languages and peoples.
Yes, so it seems, so it seems. So that's why our theory, which originally referred only to those semantic primes, we have expanded this theory and we've included the concept of semantic molecule. I mentioned the elements, but there is a slightly different analogy from chemistry, that our primes, such as good and bad and do and happen and you and I, they are sort of like atoms. But there are certain combinations of atoms, like molecules in chemistry, which are also attested apparently in all languages, including men, women, and children, for example. These concepts can be defined, but we do find words for men, women, and children so far in all languages, or mother, or the word for mother. Okay, there's a lot, you know, there are a lot of sort of objections which could come to mind to somebody who knows lots of languages, but we have dealt with those. And similarly, there are probably some environmental concepts such as sky, ground, or fire and water, which are not primes, but which can apparently can be found in all languages too.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is that there is a shared human experience, common human experience, and apparently some concepts which we find in all languages arise from common human experience, such as, for example, that there are men, women, children, that there is fire and water, and so on. And these are our molecules. They arise, we think, from shared human experience. Whereas those other more simple concepts, they don't arise from experience, like someone and something, you and I, good and bad. They really seem to be, as people now say, hardwired, innate. You are born with those and you use those to make sense of your experience.
So I guess then the name of it, natural semantic metalanguage, is a kind of a descriptor then of what you've just said.
Yes, actually this particular name comes from my colleague whom I've already mentioned, maybe Professor Cliff Goddard, and he came up with this name, natural semantic metalanguage.
Uh-huh. I have to ask you then, did you have another name for it, or was there an earlier name for it before Professor Goddard invented the NSM, the natural semantic metalanguage title?
Well, yes, I used an old Latin term, lingua mentalis, which means the mental language, because, you know, I believe and we believe that this is a kind of mental language that everybody is born with. And the idea is very old. And the term lingua mentalis goes, you know, to early centuries, so to the 5th century. And then it was taken up in the Middle Ages by philosophers like Occam and so on in the 14th century and so on. And then also Leibniz. And so I felt very much in contact with that long European tradition of looking for the innate mental language. But Cliff Goddard emphasized, a different aspect of the same thing, that you can really use it for practical purposes, for explaining meanings and ideas to other people, and for intercultural communication. So right. We have decided to use this rather than the Latin term, which could be off-putting, of course, to many people.
Right, okay. So who uses it? And when is it used?
Well, for example, I gave a lecture last year to the so-called Australian youth ambassadors, people who are going to developing countries to try to connect with local population and, you know, develop common understandings. They have to talk about ideas there, but in what way? The world is now communicating through English, and many people assume that English is just a kind of neutral medium which anybody can use regardless of their cultural background. But it's not true, and as I've tried to document in particular in my book called English, Meaning and Culture, English is full of cultural assumptions, and these are spreading around the world, and I don't think this can be somehow stopped, but it's very, very important that this should be explained, and that speakers of English, well, in whose hands there is really a lot of power now, precisely because of the privileged position of English in the world, they should really become aware of how much history and culture is reflected in English words. If you can just bear with me for one more minute, I would give you a couple of examples.
Yes, please do.
Well, for example, words like opportunities and challenges. There are no such words in other languages. Well, the word fair, the assumption that fairness is something important, that it's important to be reasonable, that it's important to distinguish right and wrong. All these words, right and wrong, reasonable, fair, opportunity, challenge, they don't have equivalents in other languages. They are the product of the history and culture of speakers of English. But it's very important for people around the world, including immigrants in Australia, to find out what these words mean and what the assumptions are which are hidden in them. And how can you explain to them? You can explain it to them through the natural semantic meta-language in very simple words, which they can understand because they will be cross-translatable into their own languages.
So one of those words, then take opportunity, for example.
Yes.
How would you explain that using the semantic primes? Can you do it in English?
You know, I asked this question recently in my class. I'm teaching a course on language and culture, and I have students from many different linguistic backgrounds. And we were reading Barack Obama's book or discussing The Audacity of Hope, and he talks about opportunities and challenges on nearly every page. And they agreed with me that there is no such word as opportunity in their languages, many of the students said. The closest you can come to it is, for example, in German, they said it was Möglichkeit, which is possibility, and in my native Polish too, possibility. But of course, opportunity is not just possibility. It is, what does it mean that you have the opportunity to do something? Well, that something happens, and because of this, you can do some things, and because of this, something can happen that you want to happen, right? It's not just possibility, but because you have to do things in the context in which some things happen, and because of this, something good can happen that you want to happen. Well, this is the basic idea.
Yeah, it's the desirability of it, I guess, rather than just the chance.
Except that I would use words like desirability and chance because they are very complex and not translatable, whereas can,
right,
want,
yes,
do, and happen are translatable.
The inventor of the natural semantic metalanguage, or lingua mentalis, and professor of linguistics at the ANU, Anna Wiesbitzka. There are lots of articles about the natural semantic metalanguage if you're interested, and it has, as well, a homepage to which there's a link from the webpage of today's Lingua Franca at abc.net.au/rn/linguafranca, where you'll find references for a couple of great books, one that Professor Wiesbitzka wrote called English, Meaning and Culture, and one that she co-edited with her daughter, some contributors to which have featured here in the past. I'm Maria Zylstra. Dui.
In November 1975, Australian journalist Roger East travelled to Timor as Indonesian forces began their invasion, and in the wake of the deaths of five reporters in a place called Balabo.
He was the first person to actually write a piece which was published in Australia, which said that witnesses had shown that the Balabo five were executed.
Uncovering the life and death of Roger East. You can download or stream this Hindsight from the Radio National website.